You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Leah Carter.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017.
Maybe 5 years after he had me start, he was very seriously trying to make me stop. The bagpipes had become something that he no longer really had control of anymore.
The story behind the man often seen playing bagpipes in Dunmeadow, coming up later in the show in a WFHB community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Hoosiers may be getting better at detecting scams. More on that in a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The city of Bloomington has discovered contaminants on land that is slated for an affordable housing development. On Monday, the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission discussed 12 acres of land located on the west side of Rogers Street where the city has plans for affordable housing. Last year, the city contracted with Pedcor Investments to develop the project on Rogers Street between the Beeline Trail and 11th Street as part of its Trades District Initiative. According to materials given to the commission, an environmental study conducted by BCA Environmentals detected the presence of arsenic, lead, and thallium above legally approved levels. Now, this triggers some restrictions by the state, including requiring developers to submit a work plan to the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. There are requirements for how the soil can be moved and possible restrictions for development. Commission member David Walter discussed some of the restrictions with City Attorney Thomas Cameron.
I'm just reading through this restriction one more time, and it says, soil in any area in which standalone, single-family, or duplex residential housing must be sampled to 10 feet below the surface. So if we do a multiple housing, which is what is going on south of this site, does that still require this type of sampling according to this?
My understanding is that it would not. There is a higher threshold for multifamily.
Okay.
Lower threshold. There's a lesser threshold.
And then it also says, believe that they have to apply for permits, but it says any residential construction. So they need to get a work plan to the department 60 days prior for approval. So any residential be multifamily, and therefore whoever develops this property will have to file that work plan and then wait for their approval before they can move dirt.
Yes.
According to Cameron, Pedcor will need to remove some of the contaminated soil and replace it with clean soil.
The Bloomington Animal Shelter will be getting a $1 million facelift this year. The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission approved spending up to $1.94 million to remodel the shelter in its meeting on Monday. Shelter Director Virgil Sauter said a study performed in 2011 determined renovations were not within their budget at the time. But in 2015, the city approved using funding for the project, allowing Sauter to develop a plan with local design firm Kirkwood Designs. Sauter said those plans call for remodeling existing parts of the shelter, as well as adding new space.
The new addition is going to encompass our intake and stray housing wing. So that existing part of the shelter is going to be where the dog runs are going to be dismantled. That's the oldest part. Some of it predates 1970 when it's crumbling. So that's the area that couldn't be rehabbed. So the new addition is going to be our stray intake wing of the shelter. And then the existing area where the Monroe County Humane Association is at and our animal control functions are is going to be rehabbed into kind of a post-adoption, more public area for meetings, concerns, education space.
Bloomington Public Works Director Adam Wason said the completion deadline has been set for January 31st, 2018.
So we'll do 6 months on the new construction, 4 months on the remodel. We'll have to do a lot of staging of where the animals go throughout the project and how we manage flow of services as well as employee parking. And so there's a lot of different moving parts there, but looking at hopefully a good construction season. You know, it is looking like it might be a wet spring, but we'll keep after things, hopeful to meet that January 31 deadline.
Earlier in the meeting, Commission member David Walter took the opportunity to ask Doris Sims, the Director of Housing and Neighborhood Development, whether the Trump administration's proposal to eliminate block grants would affect her department's funding for the year.
That actually will be for 2018. So as you know, we completed our 2017 process and we still be requesting that from HUD. So that would take us from our fiscal years June 1st of 2017 to May 31st of 2018. So if they eliminate the block grant program and the home program as well is what's on the chopping block, it would be for 2018 funding.
Sims added that her department gets 5 years to spend the community development block grant money once it's been committed to them. Sims said she hopes Congress will preserve funding for the two programs.
According to a story today in the Herald Times, the owners of Hopscotch Coffee have reportedly purchased Rainbow Bakery, and they plan to open a new location on Madison Street. Now, the new owners say they aren't changing the bakery, merely its coffee. The Rainbow Bakery will remain open the same as before, only with a slightly larger staff and extended hours from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Full-time enrollment has reached an all-time high at IU Bloomington. With the large number of students coming in, dorms are nearing capacity and sometimes overflowing. Jade Chappelle reports on the university's enrollment issue.
Indiana University has taken in the biggest number of students in history this year. Within the past 4 years, this number has risen by nearly 1,000 students, totaling at 43,213 full-time students. The growing number forced students like sophomore Eric Berger to live in dorm lounges.
I was told that, you know, it might not exist, like housing might not be there, and just like wait to find out what the next step is. So I applied, and they told me I'm gonna be in one of the lounges. I've thought about it before, and like I realize there's a ton of people here, and it's really not a good position for IU to be like, hey, we don't have a spot for you.
In-state students pay an average of $21,718 per year. And out-of-state students pay an average of $45,576 per year. The rising price of room and board could potentially lead to students taking out bigger loans to attend college. According to Kelly Thacker, Director of Housing at IU, Residential Services doesn't receive any help from the university for room and board costs.
RPS is an auxiliary, so that means that we get no money from the university. So the money that students pay in tuition does not come to us. We make all of our money off of the room and board rates. And then not only do we have to make money, but we have to have enough money to pay for our facilities and for the staff that we have.
Residential Services has implemented two brand new living facilities and four building renovations to compensate for the rising student population. Dr. Thacker said that compared to other housing programs across the country, this is a very high number of builds and renovations. The particular dorms that have been built and received the renovations are now considered the nicer and more expensive living spaces. Another potential issue of these new buildings and renovations could arise as the number of 18-year-olds in the country decreases.
And we know that because of the 18 to 22-year-old population in the United States has topped out. So if we look at like generation trends and like birth trends, I guess, back in 2011 is when we hit our peak of 18-year-olds. And so you're going to see a decline in the overall 18 to 22-year-old population in the United States, which means that IU, as an institution, has to recruit from different places.
This could potentially lead to empty spaces in the new buildings and renovations that Residential Services has needed for the current overwhelming number of students coming to IU. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Jade Chappelle.
Congressman Luke Messer of Indiana has introduced a bill that he says will reduce student loan debt. Now, if passed, the bill would require all U.S. institutions of higher education that accept federal aid to send annual letters to student loan borrowers estimating their total debt and future monthly payments. Indiana University began sending similar letters in 2012 and reported that student loan borrowing across all campuses decreased by more than 10% in just 1 year. But IU graduates like Zach Williams says being aware won't fix enough of the borrowing problem to see a noticeable difference.
You know, there's only so much you can do. So I think that being aware is only part of the battle. And I think that that eventually will kind of level out to where it's not going to save you a whole lot of money in the long run.
IU's Associate Vice President for University Student Services and Systems says several students have no idea how much they had taken out when they graduated. While Williams says being aware won't fix the problem, he was among the students that didn't know how much they had taken out until they graduated. Williams says being aware may not have allowed him to borrow a noticeably smaller amount of money, but it would have eased the level of shock among graduation.
I wouldn't have been as overwhelmed if it maybe was something I was expecting for a couple years to come, and I was working towards keeping that number as low as possible.
Messer said it's hard to pass legislation, but he has been in contact with Virginia Fox, chairwoman of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, and a Republican from North Carolina. He says he plans to actively push it in the House.
Veteran Health Indiana is currently holding a town hall meeting at the Monroe County Courthouse. The meeting began at 5 p.m. and offers veterans and the public the opportunity to support veteran health care through engagement and VA leadership. Veterans not currently enrolled in VA health care can enroll at the meeting. The Veterans Benefit Administration and the National Cemetery Administration will address benefit and burial concerns. Questions, comments, and interviews are also invited any time after the town hall by calling 317-988-2420. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Many Indiana University students and staff have taken note of a character often referred to simply as the bagpipe guy, but few know why he stands, day after day, playing his bagpipes in Dunmeadow. So reporter Victoria Zieg tracked him down to find out. In the process, she found out there was a great deal more to the strange man playing the bagpipes on IU's campus. This next story comes courtesy of a partnership between WFHB and a class at the IU Media School, taught by instructor Amy Gastellum.
My dad named me Angus because he wanted me to have a good Scottish name because I was going to play the bagpipes. Wow, okay.
No problem.
I'm trying to think. Okay, I think I have it now. My name is Angus Martin. I work for the Department of Folklore and Ethnomusicology here at Indiana University. And I'm the bagpiper who plays at Dunmeadow.
But I have recording equipment in my hands. Thank you.
I was trying to play the ones that I play for solos at first, but I couldn't get the tune down. So I my dad, he occasionally got into our family heritage. In the 90s, there was a lot of interest in Scottish arts and Scottish culture and Scottish heritage. So my dad got back into it around that time when everybody else was getting interested again. So he came home and told me that I was going to learn. I haven't seen him in over 10 years. There are other times where he got really obsessive about certain things, like once, like he was very, very seriously wanting to move to Australia because he liked the movie Quigley Down Under. So this was him.
It was once every year or two. We weren't in the military, it's just we moved a lot. I think it was he didn't like it when people got to know us too well, so he moved us around. That's my idea about why it is we did it. I don't really know. You'd have to get into my dad's head to really understand it.
Why wouldn't he want people to know you guys, though?
He was and is a shady sort of person. He was a little bit paranoid, so I consider him to be a little bit of an abusive type of person. And I think largely he didn't want people to know us as a family very much, because if we had friends and we had people who knew us very well, then that is less power for him. The more you keep somebody isolated, the more power you have over them. There was a time where he actually was trying to get me to stop playing. So he's the one who made me start, and maybe 5 years after he had me start, he was very, very seriously trying to make me stop. The bagpipes had become something that he no longer really had control of anymore, because he left, and so it was something I did.
I think if he didn't try to make me stop doing it, then I probably feel differently, because him pushing to have me stop is what gave me the opportunity to make the decision to keep playing and stick with it. And I think probably if that hadn't happened, I'd have a very different attitude about the whole thing. Because I would be left wondering if I was, you know, is this something my dad wanted me to do, or is this something I want to do?
That story airs on WFHB, courtesy of a partnership with a journalism class at the IU Media School.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
The Better Business Bureau has issued a very interesting analysis of the scams and swindles that were reported to them in 2016. Some of the news is actually optimistic. In almost 33,000 cases, a little over 6,000 people lost money. So over 80% of the people who complained were smart enough to avoid being taken. Of course, all too often, victims don't complain because they don't know how or are simply too embarrassed to admit they've been had. It turns out that age is a big factor here. As you get older, it's less likely that you'll fall for a scam, but if you do get suckered, you're going to lose more money. People in the 18 to 24 age group were three times as likely to be victims of a flimflam than people over 65, but the older crowd lost almost twice as much on average. The BBB also analyzed the way scammers find suckers, and guess what? 63% of the time, it was on the internet. Telephone calls came in second at 23%. Direct in-person contact started things just 7% of the time, and only 2% of the complaints referenced letters in the mail. The most dangerous parts of the internet were fake websites and fake emails, about equally. Together, they accounted for more than a third of total complaints. Scams on social media generated 11%, text and instant messages 9%, and 6% of the complaints were about online classified ads. The five most costly to the victims scams reported to the BBB last year were, in countdown order, Number 5, Advance fee loans, where you're guaranteed a loan regardless of your credit, but upfront fees are so high you end up owing money but not getting any. Number four was online purchases, where the seller doesn't deliver or the buyer sends a bogus check. Number three was employment scams, where you apply for a job and then find out the job doesn't exist after you've given the fraudsters all your personal information. The second most expensive scam reported to the BBC was variations on the good old fake check scam. That's where the swindler sends you a check, you deposit it, and send some of it, usually by wire transfer, back to the con artist or to a confederate, and only then discover that the check you deposited was no good. And the number one raker in of money from suckers last year was home improvement scams, where a homeowner hires someone to work on their house, pays up front, and gets shoddy work, no work at all, or is told after the work has started and things are torn up that the job will be much more expensive than originally estimated. Remember, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jade Chappelle, Christopher Boyle, Simon Williams, and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Victoria Zieg.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Leah Carter. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org and stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@WFHB.org.